This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your shivers and butterflies of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
The man them too inconsiderate, five-star hotel, smoking cigarette, mixing codeine up with a Finnegan. She got thick, but she wanna get thin again. Drinking apple cider vinegar, wearing skim, cause she wanna be Kim and them. Alright. I know they are bad, stop acting innocent. We ain't got generational wealth, it's only a year that I've had these millions.
Take a look at these diamonds. That is Central C and Dave. That is Sprinter. That is a TikTok hit turned global rap sensation. As my number one song of 2023, last week, me, JP, Lindsay convened to talk about our albums of the year. Back like we left something, because we did not talk about the songs of the year. So me, JP, and Lindsay are back. Hello, everyone.
Listing heavily.
That's correct. And no weapon formed against us, including tetchy internet, will prosper. That is the lesson for today. LZ.
What's up?
Just want to say, this is not Spawn, but like one of us is on Fios. Two of us are on Spectrum. I'm just sounding crystal clear. That's all I'm saying.
Don't blame me.
So we are going to go deep into the songs of 2023. I do want to start very quickly with like a philosophical aside, which is that I think each of us approaches the list making process a tiny bit differently. Not anymore, at least I used to, but I don't put songs on my songs list that appear on albums that are on my albums list. So it's like if there's an Olivia album, it's on the list. None of the individual songs end up on the songs list because my thought process is they've already got the prize. They're already on the list. They're on a list. So I don't need to be redundant. Lindsay, I know that you take the opposite approach. And JP, I think you're somewhere in between. So can we talk a little bit about the philosophy here? Lindsay, why, in your mind, why double dip in essence? Or is it just that they're so siloed in your mind as categories that it doesn't feel that it's double dipping?
I try to do it in a way that isn't redundant. Like if something feels like it just had to be mentioned in both formats, like it's kind of like the Grammys, you know, like you can be not.
So
I'm just
so
like the Grammys. I am just like the Grammys.
Unbelievable.
That's what I'm saying. No, but like, you know. Album of the year, song of the year. Sometimes there's overlap. Sometimes it doesn't make sense for there to be. I think for me, I'm thinking more about singles too, as opposed to songs, which I know is like, there's not much of a distinction anymore. But I think the songs that often like appear on my list that were also on albums, on the albums list, like there's something about the single and the way it existed out in the world, the way it was rolled out in some sense, like that I think makes it worth mentioning in another context. And like, you know, we can be specific about, because my number one song this year, not to just like show all the cards now, but I did pick one that also ranked pretty high on my albums list. But the song that I picked was Olivia Rodrigo's Vampire, which obviously one of the big hits of the year too.
And but lived, had a life, had a whole life.
Had a life outside of that album. Like, I think I sort of like, oh no.
Like we raised a child. Like they had a whole life.
Yes.
Should we listen to Vampire?
We should always listen to Vampire. Yes. I'm not sick of it yet somehow.
This is Olivia Rodrigo, Vampire. I like this kind of counterpoint of like the song had a life. It was its own thing. It existed outside of the album and therefore can be considered.
It's a fuzzy distinction, but like I know it when I hear it. And for this one, like, you know, that's even science over here.
Supreme Court here. Let me do it. JP, what's your politic on here? Because you're a little bit in between us, I think.
I don't do songs that are on my top 10 albums. Since I had such a ridiculously long list of other albums, I did include some songs from those albums. But I think our problem is the headline. The headline is Best Songs of 2023. And of course, the best albums are going to have the best songs, but I don't want those albums crowding out all of the other good songs that came out this year. And on the best songs list, I do sort of want to point to those albums that might have gotten overlooked, those albums that had one total banger on them. There are lots of other things. One thing that I noticed that both you and Lindsay do that I do less is you did events. You have Richmond, North of Richmond on your list, which I do not personally think is going to be a timeless, indelible classic sung at weddings for the next 20 years. But, you know, but it was an event in 2023.
not in the weddings of the coastal liberal elites, maybe. That's an interesting way to think of that song. Okay, no, tell me more about that. That's an interesting way to think about that song. You mean the number one hit, Richmond, North of Richmond. That's, yes. Just to be clear, that's what we're referring to.
I think it was a song that was a news event in 2023. It was, I don't know, maybe a top song, but not a best song. Lots of fuzzy distinctions here. There's a lot of fuzz.
Yeah, I leaned into some of the madness this year, for sure.
You truly did. You embraced chaos on
Thank
your list.
You.
I have to
Thank
just...
you so much. It's honestly an honor and a pleasure every year. But JP, let's actually talk about, both Lindsay and I have already said our number ones. Let's talk about your number one.
Well, I was pretty contrarian. I don't know if it was even a single release. I chose Eve Was Black by Alison Russell, which is a, I don't know, paleontological statement that she turns into a commentary on racism and lynching and sin and guilt. It's just, when it starts out, you think it's going to be a toe tap and Appalachian song. So I just think it's a wonderful piece of art that happens in a very few minutes, which is what I would call a song.
Let's listen to it. This is Alison Russell, Eve Was Black. I could almost counterpoint and say this is an outlier. This is not a hit in any classic sense, obviously.
No,
it's an outlier. You know, it's as much of an outlier as, you know, me picking the song from The Idol or whatever. How do you think big picture about the success of a song? And, you know, this goes to both of you, because I think, Lindsay, your framing of Vampire is like, it had a life. It was a whole thing. That can't happen in a way without the global success of it. It's not simply that it kind of came out and then 2 weeks later the album came out. There was an entire narrative attached to it. So I wonder how much you guys both think about success when it comes to picking something that's going to end up on this list.
Again, it's kind of a gut thing for me, because my pick last year, I picked something more in the vein of what your kind of pick, JP, which my number one last year was the Hooray for the Riff Raff song Life on Earth, which was from a record that I really loved, but the title track and just, you know, also not a hit in a contemporary sense, and not, I think also not a single, or maybe anyway.
Whatever a single might be today.
Yeah, I kind of went the total opposite route this year, if only to entertain myself with a little critical variety. But I did think there are a lot of songs on my list that were hits, and in some cases, number one hits. Richmond, North of Richmond, not on my list, I shall say, but I'm curious to hear more about it.
I can't wait to talk more about it.
Maybe that's, we've talked enough about that song
as a nation,
population of people. Yeah.
The rest of this episode is going to be just the two of you guys holding me to account for each individual song, like one at a time, that are on my list. But anyway,
I'm into it. I think when I was making my list, I realized this was a year where some really interesting songs hit really big and in some cases hit number one. And the Zach Bryan, Kacey Musgraves duet, I Remember Everything, is also on my list, which I think is sort of a surprising number one song and kind of was lumped into the Country Is Back, you know, Richmond, North of Richmond, and the Fast Car cover, which I don't think is on any of our lists. But, you know, it was a year where I feel like a lot of interesting music made it towards the top of the charts, and that there was...
Are you thinking Boy's a Liar Part 2?
I am, yeah.
I think we should play Boy's a Liar Part 2. This is Pink Pantherist and Ice Spice. This is the remix or the bonus version of Boy's a Liar. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
Shit that I shouldn't know. So I tell him it's one of me. He making fun of me. His girl is a bum to me. Like that boy is a cap. Saying he home, but I know where he at. Like, but he blowing her back. Think about me, cause he know that it's fat.
Okay, so this song is on both your list and my list. An interesting, so a real thing that happened when I interviewed Ice Spice in January, we're in the car and she's like, I just recorded like a feature with like a pop artist. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, who? She's like, Pink Pantherist. And I was like, seriously? Like, okay. And she played it. And I was like, I mean, this is pretty good. You know, and the thing that I was most struck by at that moment was, if we think a lot about the tempo of pop music, like Pink Pantherist is like up-tempo, like hazy memory, drum and bass, pop nostalgia. It's actually pretty similar tempo-wise to drill and like certainly like sexy drill, pop drill. And so... what's good about this collaboration is like they're both just being themselves. They're both just like they don't, it's not like there's some alternate version. Like it's not like Ice Spice on the Taylor song, who is like at like 60% speed, you know, like just doesn't sound right. Ice Spice sounds like Ice Spice. Pink Pantherist sounds like Pink Pantherist. And again, a bit of an unlikely collaboration maybe, but also I'm just like, why wouldn't these two people who are like the most popular people on the internet have like the most popular song in the country and like maybe for some stretch of time on the planet? Tell me, tell me about your enamoredness of this song.
It's just fun. It's effervescent and fizzy, and it is a heartbreak song, and it's a short one. So by the time the like 2.5 minutes are over, they are so over the sky, like both of them. And I like that it's sort of, it kind of has the structure of like almost like an advice song, like from an old girl group of just like your girlfriend is going to help you get over this guy that broke your heart. But it just sort of becomes like them affirming each other and how much cooler they both are than whoever this liar was, this unnamed liar. So like I like that the song, despite what the title kind of hints at, ends up becoming more about the chemistry that they have together on the record too. And I we should mention that this was initially part one of Boy's a Liar was a single released last year, just a solo single from Pink Pantherist. And like you said, I think it's a great example of a feature, a remix. It's not even really remix, but like a feature added after the fact, really adding something to the original. And I think this is just better in every way, even though it's kind of just dropping that verse in the track. It just, it's the one little element that I think takes it to the next level. So I'm another song I'm like still not sick of, even though I heard it a billion times this year.
It also thickens what Pink Pantherist brings. Like, I mean, when the original Boy's a Liar came out, I remember being like, well, this is cool, but this is like, are we going up or are we going flat? Like, are we plateauing? And it sort of opened a lane, I think, for, well, how can an artist like Pink Pantherist collaborate outside of the sort of immediate comfort zone of people who make music very much like her? And this is like, you know, I don't know who called who or who. I think Ice Spice said Pink Pantherist like followed her or DM'd her. I don't remember.
Yeah, I profiled Pink Pantherist this year. So I got like the other, I feel like your story, I got like the bookend of that, and that when I was like out with her at the mall, we actually heard the song like playing on the loudspeakers.
Hilarious.
And it was just like, it was such a moment, but it was a really organic thing where one of them followed the other, and then Pink sort of slid into her DMs, and they both were like, oh, I love your stuff, we should work together. And then, you know, within like a month, it probably less, like it happened. And I think it's interesting to contrast it with the Karma remix, which doesn't work for me, that there is something that feels somehow like overdetermined about that. And like, this is the person, like the focus group told us, like, this is who we need right now or something. Whereas there is just like a real off the cuff energy to this collaboration that actually is like how it happened. Like it just, you know, Pink reached out, it fit, and the rest is history.
JP, you have actually a song that kind of falls into this category as well, a big hit that's a collaboration in your top 10. That's, to my ear, it's a little bit more of like potentially like the forced collaboration, but actually kind of works. And that is Bizarrap and Shakira, song titled, the alluringly titled, Bizarrap Music Sessions number 53, which is what I always say to the DJ at the club when I'm just like, play number 53, you know, like holding up my iPhone to the DJ, number 53. Tell me a little bit about this record, because, you know, this producer has been collaborating widely with huge stars in all scenes, all Spanish language music scenes, but is both a level up for him, but also a bit of a risk, because this is where it could kind of fall apart once you're, you know, you're getting the pressures of like a big name pop star. What do you make of this song? Actually, let's listen to it. This is Bizarrap Music Sessions number 53. What do you make of this?
Well, there's no number 53 in the chorus is one thing.
Not a terribly musical number.
Yes. One of the things that has made Shakira a star for decades is that she knows who to collaborate with. Bizarrap has been making hit after hit. This is number 53. And so she knew enough to hook up with him. But it's also, it's much more produced than most of his sessions. She definitely gets more. It's not just her in the studio rapping over his track. It's got vocal harmonies. It's got production. It's her getting down to that, you know, guy in a studio level.
As close as she kind of can.
It's her grabbing some street credibility and him leveling up to pop. The video clip also has CGI effects, you know, her eyes flash lightning, which doesn't happen in his other videos. She's definitely bringing the pop budget and the pop production to his music. But the other thing about this song is it is gossip column friendly. It's tabloid friendly. There are all these direct digs at her ex and a lot of in-jokes that were immediately parsed by the internet. So she gets the tabloid mentions, she gets the street credibility, and he gets a better-known pop star to level up to.
Does this song fit more cleanly in Shakira's catalog or in the Bizarrap catalog to you, to your ear?
Is that a choice? I don't know.
I mean, not to be out here making false binaries, but, you know, I wonder where it sits. And I don't think it has to be one or the other, but I'm curious if you think it's one or the other.
I don't actually, because it continues his sound, which is basically updating electro, and it continues her status as a she-wolf. So it's a nice extension for both of them.
Let's do this, since we haven't really gotten totally in the weeds with stuff. One thing it's important to remember, if first of all these lists are on the website, but the NY Times Spotify account, Karen carefully, lovingly makes playlists. So if you want to listen to this in playlist form, which would be maddening, I'm certain, but if you want to listen to these songs in playlist form, they exist on the New York Times Spotify account. So go ahead and check that out, and I don't know, follow Karen. I don't know, send her, can you send messages on Spotify? I don't know, idea. But anyway, go tap in with that. But let's do this real quick. JP, just talk through, just give me your top 10. Just talk through the names. And if you want to sprinkle a little expressive salt on there, then by all means.
A little commentary.
Yeah, some light.
Well, first of all, Alison Russell's Eve was black. Peter Gabriel, Road to Joy. Peter Gabriel trickled out his album all year. Road to Joy came out mid-year. It's your basic Peter Gabriel sci-fi science song about a guy waking up from a coma. But it's also a lot of fun because as the guy wakes up from the coma, the song just keeps getting funkier and brighter. It's a fun song from an album I think that got underrated this year because it took so long to emerge. Next up, Lindsay's theme song, 100 Gecs, Dumbest Girl Alive. Lindsay, you have claimed this is your theme song. I am not casting aspersions.
Put emojis on my grave.
Yeah.
It's a banger.
It really is.
Sampha came back this year after, what, 5 years? And with an album, Lahai, which I was thinking about for the top 10 or the top 20. But as I was playing through stuff, this one song, Suspended, just... This is one of those like amazing songs on a good album situations. It goes from minimalism to hyper pop to just pure melancholy and rapture. So listen to it. Number five, I'm older than you guys. I took the Rolling Stones, the peak of their comeback album, Hackney Diamond, Sweet Sounds of Heaven. It has Stevie Wonder on keyboards. It has Lady Gaga pushing Mick Jagger. It sounds like a studio jam, except that they happen to have a horn section coming in. It just feels really good and gospel-y and spontaneous.
I like this song for the record, too.
Can we listen to this song? and this will absolutely be, when I listen to this episode back, the first time I've heard this song. Sweet Sounds of Heaven, Rolling Stones, Lady Gaga, Stevie Wonder.
This podcast is supported by Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
Americans United defends your freedom to live as yourself and believe as you choose, so long as you don't harm others. Core freedoms like abortion rights, marriage equality, public education, and even democracy itself rest upon the wall of separation between church and state. Christian nationalists are attacking these fundamental freedoms. Americans United is fighting back. Freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more about AU's work at au.org/NYT.
I'm David Marchese.
And I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro.
And we're the hosts of The Interview from The New York Times.
David and I have spent our careers interviewing some of the most interesting and influential people in the world.
Which means we know when to ask tough questions and when to just sit back and listen.
And now we've teamed up to have these conversations every week. We'll try to reveal something about the people shaping our world.
And we'll get some great stories from them, too.
It's The Interview from The New York Times. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Number six, Yaritza y su Esencia. Yaritza is Mexican-American, Washington State. This song, to me, has an Olivia Rodrigo kind of vast, heartbreaking crescendo in it. It's a duet with Grupo Frontera, who are from Texas. They're apologizing for breaking her heart. She's totally devastated. Yaritza y su Esencia and Grupo Frontera, Fragile. Baby Rose, Stop the Bleeding, another incredibly fragile song. Bizarrap and Shakira. Number nine, Killer Mike featuring Future, Andre 3000, and Aaron Allen Kane, Scientists and Engineers. Cross-generational Atlanta rap. An extremely rare rap appearance by Andre 3000. A breathtaking marathon finale from Killer Mike. And no flutes were injured in the making of the song.
Sorry, I was just bumping the flute album in the background. My bad.
Number 10, Brittany Howard's What Now? Yet another heartbroken breakup song full of guilt and blame and noise.
Elsie, you want to run yours?
Let's go. So Vampire at number one, we already discussed. And Boy's a Liar at number two, which we already discussed. My number three song was Lana Del Rey's A&W, which is a journey of a song. It's a 7 minute plus just glimpse into the mind of Lana and just transforms, almost feels like two different songs, transforms into something really strange and unexpected at the end. And that was a song that I just found mesmerizing this year, and Lana at the peak of her powers. My number four was Boy Genius with Not Strong Enough. This was one where the Boy Genius record, in spite of being a fan of them individually and collectively, this record never quite clicked for me as a record that is also called the record. I connected more with the EP that they put out a few years ago, but there were a few standalone songs. I think the problem was I like when they really rock out and there's a little too many like downer songs on the, like, I think I was getting lost in the ballads a little bit and in the kind of like down tempo stuff. But this song, I think, really clicked for me quite recently when I saw them perform it on SNL, which was such a cool moment. Like, I, you know, I've been following all three of these artists since, you know, the thought of them performing on Saturday Night Live would have been wild. And so it just, I think this is really like a rocker where they get to, you know, just have like a drum fill moment and really like milk the drama of it. And there's, I think it showcases each one of them as a distinct lyricist too. Like, it's some of the Boy Genius songs feel like, okay, this is a Lucy song and this, you know, but I think this one really, like, they all come together in this really beautiful way. So that was my number four. Number five, also kind of, I think you said, JP, like a great song on a good record, or one where like the song is Romy, the lead singer of the XX, with Enjoy Your Life. And this was a record, it was called Midair, her debut solo album. I was really excited by the singles. There were a few singles I could have chose from this record. And then once the album finally came out, I was a little underwhelmed by like it kind of felt like when they put all the good jokes in the trailer thing, like it felt like all the best songs were the singles, but I really connected with the singles and wanted to, you know, acknowledge that in some way. This song is built around a really beautiful sample of Beverly Gunn Copeland saying, "My mother says to me, enjoy your life." And there's, it's just like a real warm, fuzzy dance tune.
I'd actually love to hear this song. This is Enjoy Your Life.
Okay, at number six, I had Mitski with My Love, Mine All Mine. I know, JP, you had a different Mitski song from this record a little farther down on your list. This was another one where I think I went with the event as much as the song. And the event was this song also being a pretty unexpected chart hit. It's like still on the Billboard Hot 100, I believe, as we speak, like somewhere in the lower half, and has really had this unusual staying power. And what I love about it and the success that it's found is it's really like a slow, almost challenging Mitski song. Like, it's not one of the ones that you would think would go viral on TikTok, and yet it did. And I think that goes to show like just this maturity she's found in, like, she can make sort of more challenging songs and songs that she seems to really connect to and want to make. And then she has such a rabid fan base online that even like a song like this can become somehow a viral sensation. So I thought, I love the song and I love that that happened to a really good song. But I think I was acknowledging that phenomenon there too, and that event, if you will. My number seven, we spoke about a bit. It's Zach Bryan and Casey Musgraves with I Remember Everything. My number eight, I know this is on your list too, Cara Monica, Agoura Hills, Doja Cat. There were like three different singles off the Doja Cat record that I could have put here, but I think we both chose the correct one in the end. I love this song.
I agree. I had a very similar feeling. You know, I'm a huge fan of Doja Cat's extremely pop work, and I have put those songs like on prior lists. When I reviewed this record, I would not have guessed that this would have been one of the bigger songs on the record. This felt like an inside joke to me, especially because of, like, you know, the Kitty Pryde, whether it's literal or unknowing, the OK Cupid sprinkle of that flow. And I just, you know, I remember listening to it and being like, ah, great, we were on the same internet 11 and a half years ago. Like, that's cool. Like, we were on the same tweets, you know, like, that's love to know that a pop star I like was reading the same tweets.
Hopefully not all the same internet as Doja Cat.
No. Hey, no, not that internet. I don't go on that internet.
Just clarifying.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to respond to the allegations. No, I don't go on that internet. But I was surprised that this kind of became like a low key hit, a really good song. But truly a song that I primarily saw just through the lens of like, it's an in-joke on some level. But no, it's an in-joke made by like one of the five most famous musicians making music. So I guess it's like that could be a pop hit too. But yeah, good song.
Yeah, great song. Number nine, I had Jess Williamson with Hunter. Jess Williamson's Texas-born singer-songwriter who did a record last year with Katie Crutchfield from Waxahachie as Plains. And this was from Jess's solo album of this year. And I think this single came out pretty early in the year, but just really stuck with me. It's sort of a song about like the fatigue of dating and the fatigue of like having to put yourself out there over and over again. The refrain is that she's a hunter for the real thing and she's, you know, looking for her real love, a la Mary J. Blige, and that's not a comparison that
I was just going to say. Do you think that is
what
was
in? Direct reference? No, but there was something about like it felt like one of those songs that's like no one really writes about this specific emotion and in a very specific way. And I thought the lyrics were very poetic and just, you know, the persistence of like having to put your heart out there to be broken over and over again. I thought she found like a really good metaphor to talk about that. And so it's a beautiful song. And then at number 10, I had yet another Olivia Rodrigo.
I know.
Single.
It's like, I'm sorry. It's like, now I'm starting to be like, maybe we should change the rules, you know?
Well, I can justify though. I kind of did. I bookended them on purpose. Because I think, no, I did.
That's all I know.
Let me defend myself here.
Please.
I think these were two singles that really showed two different things that Olivia can do very well. And, you know, these were the first two singles released ahead of the album. And, you know, they're Vampire more in the vein of like Driver's License and what we're kind of like expecting from her, although I think it has a lot of formal twists and turns that make it something more complicated than that. But then this song like really just showed off a new side of her, both sonically and just captured like how funny she is in her delivery. There's a lot of humor to the concept of it. The sound is just like really fun and more rock oriented, but in this sort of off the wall, like off kilter way. So I think there's a breadth to what she's doing that I don't just appreciate like ballad Olivia. It felt like I had to acknowledge like rocker Olivia too. And this was my favorite of the singles that did that.
This wasn't the best Olivia Rodrigo songs of 2023 list. Just
that I could make that list.
Okay, I'm just saying. I'm simply saying
that song is so funny. I mean, she's not just a sad girl.
It's so funny.
She's onto herself, which is pretty amazing for someone who was probably 19 when she wrote it.
And onto you. Like that's such a good phrase, JP. Like she's onto herself, but she's also onto you. Like I see you. Okay, so I'm going to run through my top 10, and then after each song, Lindsay is going to drag me or interrogate me about what I have done this year. Okay, so number one is Sprinter, as we said at the beginning of the show. This is, I think, a great moment. I was actually having a conversation earlier today with someone who's writing an article about this song's success this year. And it's just really, it feels like a true global rap hit, even if it wasn't like a Billboard Hot 100 hit here. It's just like anybody I know who cares about good rap music knows about the song, likes the song. It's TikTok hit, but it's also kind of like a real heads type of record. And it's also a pop hit in most of Europe. And it doesn't feel like inaccessible. It's not like, I can't understand what they're talking. Like, it's just a very smooth and slick new money rap record. Great. In Central City of Dave. Number two. Yeah, let's go. World Class Sinner / I'm a Freak from the most conversed about television show of 2023, The Idol. And this is by Jocelyn, as voiced by Lily Rose Depp. I was at a party a few months ago, and the DJ played this song like five times, and it absolutely rang off each time. Obviously, when this song first appeared on the show, everybody was like, oh, it's like they're parodying pop music. Oh, it's so empty. Oh, like that's the thing. It's like it's empty and she's empty. And oh, isn't that terrible? No, it's great.
You sure you're not trolling, John?
It's great.
You sure you're not trolling? What kind of a party was that?
Me?
Kitty party?
Moi? It was a thumping party. A rocking party.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
I listened, I will say, I listened to the playlist today, like, I just sort of in order to get a sense of your guys' picks. And, like, the transition between your second and third song, first of all, took me on a voyage. But I also, like, I found myself, I think I had a very negative reaction when I saw this on your list because it just triggered me to remember the experience of watching The Idol, which was like some of the most wasted time of my whole year.
Unpleasant.
But I found myself like enjoying this song more than I remembered, just like listening to it as a hit single of the year. But I also found myself like laughing along with, like, do you think this song is satire, I guess is my question for you.
Well, what satire in the eyes of whomst?
Yeah, we're gonna get deep. Like, I don't
like
think
to, like, obviously it's made as, I don't know if it's parody in the purest sense, but it is made enough, it is made with the intentions of like falsifying a pop hit.
Sure.
Like and made, frankly, by some people who, like, don't make loads of pop hits, or they're pop adjacent, or they're, like, alt-pop or whatever, you know. So, but what's the difference between, like, someone falsifying it and someone making it for real?
Yeah, there are just a few lyrics in the song that, like, I just let, like, what's the, like, you're stupid and cute and in the right ratio or something. Like, it's just, like, which honestly sounds like a Charlie XCX
lyric. I was just going to say, like, how different from, like, track 7 on the Tate McRae album? How different? Probably not that different. Tate McRae probably studying this record.
But is that number 2 on your top 10?
Yes. Here's the thing. Okay, so
yeah.
I don't know how you guys make your actual list, but this is what I do. I just write all the songs, you know, like, all the songs in no order. And then I write the blurbs, and I'm listening as I'm writing the blurbs. And as I'm writing, I'm, you know, like puzzle piecing, like, ah, this feels a little bit better than this. And then, ah, this maybe isn't quite what I remember. And I'm like shuffling. And this song, which was actually one of the last songs I put on the list because I'd forgotten about it, through the shuffle, just kind of like very casually sauntered its way up to the number 2. And I was like, you know what? Feels right. Feels right. Anyway, if you are at a party, if you are DJing a party, throw on World Class Sinner / I'm a Freak and watch the kids go wild. That's all I have.
And then segue it into the next song.
Number 3, yeah. Drop them. Rich Men, Northern Richmond. Just hit him in the head with Rich Men, Northern Richmond. Number 3, Oliver Anthony Music. JP, I was surprised to hear you talk about this as an event more than a song, because it's undeniably an event. But the thing that I was most struck by in this event is that weeks after it, I was just unconsciously singing the song to myself. It really stuck with me. And maybe because it was such an event, I focused really intently on the lyrics to try to, like, you know, like, parse them and unearth them and be like, is he talking about QAnon? Like, what's happening here? So maybe they were unusually stuck in my head for a song that kind of had a real burst of attention, but no real mechanism to remain at the center of the conversation. But I think it's a very good song. I think it's stuck because it's a very good song. And JP, I wonder, what do you feel about it as a song?
I think it's an okay song, melodically, structurally. I think his voice is what grabs you.
Yeah.
The tone of his voice is what makes it stand out more than his confusion about who's responsible for the troubles of the working man.
But not enough to move it out of event record in your mind.
Not for me, no. But to each his own.
Well, at my part, at my nightclub, World Class Center, I'm a Freak, does get it's real DJ Mandy vibes. We're just going to drop Richmond, North of Richmond, just like right on top of World Class Center, I'm a Freak. And then we're going to follow with another Mustafa, Name of God. Mustafa is a folk singer from Toronto, one of my favorite performers in any genre for the last few years. This is the first single from what I assume is going to be a new project next year. Incredibly mournful. There are all kinds of grief that are addressed in this suite of songs that we're talking about. This is probably the purest. Number 5, Boy's a Liar, Part 2. Number 6, speaking of grief, Save Me, Big Jelly Roll with Lainey Wilson. This is an updating of the solo version of Save Me, which is like Jelly Roll's viral / breakout country hit from a couple years ago. Jelly Roll, as podcast listeners know, we just interviewed Jelly Roll on this week's Deluxe. He has a lot to say about making this kind of music and the moral and emotional obligations that come with making this kind of music. This is a real like punch to the head kind of powerful record. Number 7, Johnny Dang by That Mexican OT with Paul Wall and Drody. Just like a very good, tough Houston rap song that has some slow stuff and some fast stuff and really feels very modern. That Mexican OT is a really good rapper. Number 8, Cody Johnson, country singer from Texas, a song called The Painter. I've talked about this a little bit on Deluxe, but like, had some car issues a few months ago and I had to have a rental car for like a month. I was driving around and in that rental car I had satellite radio. I've not had satellite radio really at any time in my adult life, and we don't have country radio in New York anymore. That station came and then went away, and so I was listening to the country stations a lot on satellite radio, and they would play this endlessly, this song, and it actually super worked on me. This is just a real stuff. I mean, the album is called Leather. Sick. This is just a song, you know, about a real stoic guy just being like, I'm just like a miserable old nothing without you. I hate to be me except when I'm with you. What a great sentiment for the holidays and frankly for all times. Number 9, we're back with the madness. It's I'm Just Ken. Can we just play like, I don't even want to play 20 seconds of I'm Just Ken. Can we just play that? This is Ryan Gosling as Ken in Barbie.
This podcast is supported by the new Porsche Panamera. When you follow the crowd, you lose something that few possess. Originality. By forging your own path and embracing the unknown, living fearlessly, without limits or reservations, and trusting your instincts, you'll chart a brave new course of your own. The new Porsche Panamera. Choose boldly.
I remember being in the theater watching the movie and just being like, this goes way harder than it has any right to go. What a preposterous song. It goes so damn hard. I think I read some article, you know, like Ryan Gosling, like recorded the whole thing in 2 hours, you know, so busy. So like go and record it really fast and whatever. Like, that's great. Most pop stars do that. Don't need to have a whole article about it, if we're being honest. But I think this is an incredible, tacky song. The fact that it tap dances through its tackiness so beautifully, it's like that's an extra level unlocked.
No trolling involved.
I'm not, JP, we've been doing this for 15 years. Come on, man. Come on. Do you think that I'm just sitting here just being like, I mean, I am, but I mean it sincerely.
Yeah, I believe that.
It's not trolling. It's sincere. This is a sincere provocation. Is not trolling.
I mean, I think this song might win an Oscar. I think I am right. You know,
the number nine best song of the year might win an Oscar.
That's usually where the campaigning starts, is like in the bottom half of the top 10 of John Kerouac's Year End List.
That's right. This is Spawn. This is Spawn. Barbie Spawn. Okay, Lindsay, to you, is this a more chaotic choice or is the Idol song a more chaotic choice?
I don't think you can measure chaos by definition.
That's right.
I would say, if you asked me which song I would rather listen to, like when we wrap this podcast, it's World Class Sinner. I'm a Barbie hater. I just am. And I think the problem I have with this song is like one of the overall problems I had with the movie, which is that like I just don't think it's funny and it's trying so hard to make me laugh, and I'm just like, calm down a little bit, you know. That was how I felt about the whole movie, and it's like a big jumble of ideas thrown at you and it didn't work for me.
I totally agree. To me, I think the thing with the movie is it spends so much energy calling attention to its idiosyncrasies. Like, look what we're getting away with. Like, can you believe we're getting away with this?
Yeah. I just wanted to be like, take a deep breath.
Right. But this was one of the few moments in the film where I was like, nah, this is an opera. Let's go.
Again, listening to this today, I was like, this is going to be really fun when they perform this at the Oscars. Like, Ryan Gosling, that's going to be his moment, and happy for him.
JP, do you think that my inclusion of these songs, you think it's trolling? Do you think they're even valid to be included, considering they're not like classically commercially released songs? I'm like, yeah, I mean, obviously they're on Spotify or whatever, but like, do you think that they should be DQ'd just on principle?
No principle involved. They're a little too, pardon the expression, contrived for me. The Ryan Gosling song is a great Who song. I mean, it's got, he's totally, you know, being Pete Townsend, or whoever wrote it is being Pete Townsend.
That sounds
with
great.
Guitar buildup, but it's been done.
Maybe I should go listen to The Who.
Yeah, you should. Love Rain Over Me.
All right, JP, do you genuinely, you think I'm trolling? For real?
No, I think you're provoking. I think you're saying, what is the point of a pop song in 2023?
If anybody would get it, I knew you would.
I try.
I know. This reminded me, actually, in Lindsay, when I heard, so I heard from Karen that you had said, like, JC, you know, JC really went for it this year. And I was like, did I really go for it this year? And then I went back through older Songs of the Year lists. And I just want to say, I've been going for it every year.
Yeah.
Like, I put the designer Timmy Turner freestyle clip as my number one song of like 2016 or something.
Oh,
like,
that brings me back.
That's a good one. Just sometimes, how does pop music function? It functions like notionally, like the atomic space. It's like the song is the atom, but the song is not like an inviolate concept. It could be a bunch of stuff. Like, it could be a snippet. It could be a, you know, it could be a remix. It could be something that appears in the commercial. It could be something that it could come from so many different places. And that's, I want to cram all of that into whatever this list form is, which, you know, we are graciously saddled with.
I respect that. I really do. And I like that there's like, we each interpret the question a little bit differently. Like, I think that's
helpful.
That makes for a fun discussion and some good variety on these lists. So for the record.
My number 10 is actually, it sort of functions very much the opposite of a lot of these other songs. So this is Gunna. This is Bleep You Mean by Gunna. And this is a strange song that to me was almost so generic that it became so ubiquitous that I almost forgot what it was at a certain point. Like, I totally was just like hearing it everywhere. It's like you're hearing it on car stereos, you're seeing it on videos and on YouTube, and I would always just be like, what is this again? But it's like, when you ask what is this again about 20 times, obviously the song is doing something correct, even if it's also doing something slightly incorrect, which is like not imprinting exactly on art. But the ubiquity and the familiarity really like started to coalesce for me over the course of a couple months of hearing this song pretty much everywhere. Okay, before we go, look, we all have like longer versions of lists. Should I ask JP? Maybe we'll each ask each other about one song that's on the bottom part of the list.
I like it.
Okay.
Well, I want to ask you about Evils, which I had not heard. Is totally experimental and murky and, you know, morose and provocative. Tell me about it. Where did it come from?
And also kind of poppy, right? Like at the same time. So, okay.
So you know what it is? It's sort of nagging in a good way.
Mm-hmm. So here's, all right. So the backstory on this is I was going down a hole of some like, you know, like underground rage rap micro scene type stuff, you know, post Yeat, certainly post Playboy Cardi, and landed in like a universe where this kid Netspend is like a central figure and has like a number of songs that are like extremely chaotic. Netspend is also on my list. There's also like a little bit of recency bias because I was doing this like the month before list making. So, you know, that's the other thing with making lists is like sometimes it's like you might forget something from February. Forgive with apologies to everybody who put out great songs in February. And so I was like on Netspend. I was on a Netspend kick and by extension, a kick of like producers and other rappers who work with him. And then I did something that I genuinely never ever do, which is on Spotify, you can like play a quote unquote radio station that's connected, you know, it's like algorithmically generated. It's like it's basically like recommended if you like. So it's like a radio. So I just like put on Netspend radio and on like a car ride once, and it came across Evils and also an artist named Jadis, who turned out to be the same person. Evils is an alter moniker of Jadis. I got so enamored. I think of everybody in that scene, Evils, and there's kid, I think it's Yapaj is how you pronounce his name, but like to me are probably really good in addition to Netspend. And I just, the thing I was struck by, all these songs that Evils made, and he has two other monikers, were all made in like the last like 12 to 14 months. And there's like 40 songs, 50 songs. But the Evils stuff is the poppiest to me. It's the crispest. It's the most, it has the most potential to go somewhere outside of this like murky underground scene. And it was like just like a pure example of like the algorithm generally serves you some silliness, but this was like, let me just see what happens. And I got served something legitimately quite good.
Can I ask you, John, about Miley Cyrus used to be young?
You sure
can.
That was
a shocker.
The final addition to this list was that. Here's how I feel about this, Miley. I mean, I talked about this briefly on Deluxe, but like, if Miley Cyrus was currently 55 years old, 60 years old, but had lived the same life, but, you know, just was like at that stage of her life, and put out this song, this is the Grammy winner for Song of the Year or for Record of the Year. It is a invested, pretty well sung, pretty well written, slow, lightly morbid ballad about what it's like to age gracelessly. This is the kind of thing that we sort of expect from artists, you know, again, in their 50s or 60s, and that are historically rewarded in a Grammys or Grammys type context. The fact that Miley is at, what is she, 30, 32, 34, and already at this phase of her career, I found quite striking. And I think it's a really good song by a person who doesn't often get credit for singing really well. She's a really good singer.
Okay. You convinced me. Miley's an old soul, so I think she sells this song.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. And this was the last song I put on the list. Like I was sort of like, am I really? And I was like, yeah. It absolutely goes. Okay, good. Thank you for asking me about those. I'm so happy. I'm so happy to speak about both Evils and Miley's art. And also, certainly, I don't think Evils was expecting to be on the list with Miley Cyrus, nor Miley Cyrus with Evils.
Actually, they're gonna jump into each other's DMs.
They should.
Boy's a Liar Part 3 right now.
They should make a record together. Some kid posted a link to the like saying like, hey, like these Netspend and Evils, they're on like the New York Times list. That's wild. And posted the link and someone on Twitter responded, this link definitely malware. So anyway, shouts to everybody in that little Twitter ecosystem. Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, LZ, let me ask you about something. Let's talk about Wednesday. So you have a song, it's number 14, it's Chosen to Deserve. I got to be honest, I tried to get into this band, couldn't do it. So talk me through Wednesday.
This felt to me like I was like, this is going to be like the one random indie rock record that's on John's list at the end of the year. And it was not. That was Mandy Indiana, as we discussed last time.
That was Mandy Indiana, yeah.
But I...
Good guess, though. Like, yeah, you know, plausible.
I think about these things ahead of time. Yeah, I love this song. I think the band Wednesday just scratches an itch of like nostalgia for like wasted suburban teenage years and young adulthood and the kind of like mix of the sacred and profane that conjures up. This, I think this song in particular, there's just like the lyrics are really striking, at times shocking, in just the, you know, banality of the admissions of like drug use and all sorts of other tomfoolery going on in these people's lives. But it's a love song at its heart. So Carly Hartzman, who is the lead singer and primary songwriter of Wednesday, just a really good songwriter. I like the way there's a refrain that kind of like weaves throughout this song of like, I'm the girl that you've chosen to deserve or something, which is like so sad. And then she sort of slightly tweaks the phrasing as the song goes on, and it ends up somewhere really heartwarming and being like, you know, you were fated to choose me, or like you were chosen by something greater than yourself to deserve me. And I thought that was just like a very elegant turn of phrase. So I think there's like a Shaggy Dog sensibility to it on the outside. But then once you really get down to like how this song is put together, I think it's really well crafted too.
Lindsay, we both had Jamila Woods featuring Duendita, Tiny Garden, mm-hmm. which is a love song of small increments. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, this was another one. The Jamila Woods record was also on my albums list, but I saw it. This was like a really good introduction to what she was doing on this album, which is just this really clear-eyed view of romance and how some things, you know, take a long time to bloom and others don't. But yeah, as you said, it's a love song in small increments. It's about the gradual progression of something and also just kind of being happy with like small and modest things. And it's like a hard thing to write a catchy song about. And I think she did it and made it somehow just very moving and poetic, as all of her songs are, because she is a poet herself. But this was just like one of the songs that made me happy every time I put it on this year, and just has kind of like a warm, fuzzy quality that can be hard to pull off without veering into like too sentimental. But I think she's a sharp enough writer to do that well.
Lindsay, there's another one you picked that I was trying to wedge into my list, but it got too long, was Jen Champion's Jessica. Not a happy song.
No, this song is devastating, but this was one, like, I think the first time I heard this song, I gasped. Like, it was like, there's a lot of lines in the song where it's just like, are you allowed to say that? Like, it's very sparse, piano-driven song about losing a friend to an overdose in midlife. So, you know, it's totally devastating, but it's also, it's a song about grief phrased in really unconventional terms and kind of expressing the anger that we sometimes have when someone, you know, is gone too soon from succumbing to their own struggles and just all of the complicated, knotty feelings you're left with as a survivor. And yeah, this one, I think it's an incredible song. It's really powerful and yeah, like a bit shocking at times, but I think like, you know, there's a power to that and saying the unspoken. And, you know, I think it's a song that hopefully will help some people connect to their own complicated feelings too.
JP, let's talk about Lorraine. I Killed Your Dog. Great name.
Lorraine studied music at Yale. She is a virtuoso. She knows her way around harmonies inside out. And she uses the sheer construction of her music to make the ambiguity of what she's singing about even more labyrinthine. The song about I Killed Your Dog is about her thinking the worst of herself and thinking about the effect she had on somebody else. And I just love the chord progression and the sort of matter-of-factness of lines like I Killed Your Dog and the way it sinks into this harmonic murk that it barely makes its way out of, but it does make its way out of. So part of it is the music geek in me, but part of it is that I think even if you're not thinking about what chromaticism she's using, it just comes out and grabs you.
JP, I wanted to ask about the Dolly Parton song that you chose, World on Fire.
I just like the bravery of it. I mean, it's so unexpected for her to be channeling Queen and AC/DC. And it's a song about a real apocalypse coming. And she tries to be upbeat about it. She talks about love and healing. But at the end, it's just really grim. She sings, what you gonna do when it all burns down? And you're left in this kind of apocalyptic doom metal space, which is the last thing you expect from Dolly Parton.
Well, let's go out with that Dolly Parton
song. A little
song.
Doom for the holidays.
Yeah.
I mean, it's grim times. Why not celebrate with a song that speaks to the moment? That's our episode. That is the second of the year-end episodes. The real question is, when do we get Karen Gans to talk about 2023? This is really, I know I'm thinking about it. I know everybody on this episode's thinking about it. I think Karen's thinking about it too. So maybe next week, TBD. We'll see. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Podcast Deluxe, it's on YouTube at youtube.com/podcast. Like and subscribe. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com, and subscribe to podcast anywhere you get your audio content or your audio video content. That could be Spotify, Apple, or YouTube. tinyurl.com/podcast Discord or /podcast Facebook. Is where everybody's hanging out and talking. So go hang out and talk there. Stickers and shirts are at itsthepopcast.myshopify.com. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We will be back next week. This is Dolly Parton reminding us of a world on fire. Let's ride.